A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 358. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television. And this time we are continuing our discussion about the Avengers, the early years. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
We are continuing to look at series 1, 2, and 3 of one of the most iconic British television shows. The spy series that ran for 161 episodes, 50-minute episodes, from 1961 through 1969, a total of 6 series. But what we're looking at here is series 1, 2, and 3, which ran from 1961 through 1964. And these are the episodes from before Emma Peel was introduced, and they were entirely in black and white.
So yes, black and white, as you say, Brian, 3 series, 78 episodes, of which 55 survive in their entirety, and a fraction of the very first episode, Hot Snow. And as we talked about quite a bit last time, it started as a very hard-nosed crime and espionage show. But as it went on, it would do lots of amazing, innovative television and would become the epitome of the sexy 60s spy-fi series.
Yes, absolutely. And there was a gradual shift from the style they had at the beginning to what you would see by late 1964. So that's quite interesting to see, of course.
Very much so.
So let's talk about John Steed. And we've mentioned a number of times how he was so different in the early years and sort of more the hard-bitten spy and crime fighter rather than the eccentric gentleman he would become with the umbrella and the bowler hat. Initially, he was often wearing a trench coat. But gradually, you did see him more with the umbrella and the bowler hat. You did see that sometimes in series 1 and quite a bit in series 2 and sort of more and more. By series 3, I think you saw it in every episode. And when he did wear a hat, you know, when he was outdoors, it was almost always the bowler. In series 2, we would sort of switch between the fedora and the bowler. And it gradually, you know, it was the bowler and the umbrella became his look. He was going undercover a lot, which he did throughout the series, but especially in those earlier days, he would go undercover not as sort of this gentleman style character, but as other types of things he would use for going undercover.
And interestingly, he never uses a gun himself, I believe, Steed. He might pick up a gun that someone else has dropped, but he never actually wields a gun. It's always the umbrella, I think, Brian, or a cricket bat in some stills I've seen as well.
Yes, he would not carry a gun. And Ian Hendry, as Dr. Keel, wouldn't carry a gun either. And this was, we're told, related to the fact that both actors had served in World War II. So this is something that we see, and yeah, you certainly do see Steed using guns at times, but he doesn't carry one, and the actor, Patrick McNee, did not want to carry a gun as Steed. He has made that clear in interviews.
And the other thing about John Steed that's always been a mystery to me is who he works for, which I guess we get various hints, I think, in later series, although it's never, if I'm right, I don't think it's ever actually established the name of the agency or ministry that he works for. But he's clearly a good guy. And I think, as he says himself to Dr. Keel, he is on the side of the angels. But of course, initially he was the supporting character. Ian Hendry was top billed as Dr. David Keel. And yet, how fascinating is it that Patrick McNee goes on to dominate this series as one of the main leads and becomes this absolute icon of British television? You know, Ian Hendry, did he make the right choice, Brian?
Yes, I don't know. It isn't clear. But I do think if Ian Hendry had not left and they continued with him as the lead, I don't think we would have had a series that lasted throughout the 60s. And I don't think we would have a series that is so iconic. I think what they had originally was fine. It was a decent TV series. But I don't think it was anywhere near as interesting and unusual as what it would become.
Yes, Patrick McNee, with his natural sort of screen presence and charisma, the witty, charming banter that he strikes up both with his female companions, but also with some of the bad guys that he memorably goes up against. And he becomes the character that the show is built around to a large degree.
Yes, absolutely. And the idea of Steed with a woman as his co-star in, roughly speaking, equal importance between the two of them, and both of them being sort of fighting and action type characters, that became sort of a big deal. And that was something that was really unusual in, you know, 1962-63. Even throughout the 60s, we didn't really see other shows giving a female lead that kind of presence and that kind of role.
Yes, fascinating. And, you know, as you say, the characters that they decided to partner with Steed after Dr. Keel leaves the show because Ian Hendry's gone off to pursue a movie career, they're fascinating.
Yes, and Dr. King was a replacement for Dr. Keel, and it was really because they had a few scripts they wanted to use, and when they were going into production, they didn't have time, I think, to retool those or start with new scripts. So the first thing they started doing was producing these Dr. Keel episodes with the character replaced by Dr. King and John Rollison cast to replace Ian Hendry. And those three episodes were there to sort of get them going. They already intended to have a woman as the co-star. And initially, there were two women as co-stars. You had Venus Smith as the amateur, who was this jazz singer. She was a singer in nightclubs. And she became sort of more and more someone who could help out Steed in all of this. And she had a song, a full-length jazz tune that she would perform, a different one in each episode she was in. We mentioned last time about the jazz soundtrack being a prominent part of the earlier part of the Avengers. And that was most true in the Venus Smith episodes, where they had a jazz combo, you know, three-piece instrumental jazz combo playing, with her soloing for a complete jazz performance in each episode. And that was definitely something different from what we see in shows now.
Yes, absolutely. It was very jazzy for a while in that second series.
For sure.
And then, of course, we get to Honor Blackman turning up as Dr. Kathy Gale. So let's talk about her for a moment. This independent, intelligent, very articulate female character, quick wits, you know, her sparring banter with John Steed, and her fighting abilities, her judo skills, which were a revelation for early 1960s television, and in fact, I think for the culture of 1960s in the UK.
Yes, I think so. She quickly became, you know, one of the main characters along with Steed, and it was the two of them as this duo that were the Avengers. And often one or the other or both of them would go undercover for different things. And We had sort of witty sparring banter between them that became a big part of things. And it sort of became the character, the core of that series.
And of course, Kathy Gale's a huge hit with the viewers almost immediately. She, you know, regularly featured in magazine articles about her style, about her independent lifestyle, her fashion, and particularly the leather outfits that they started to give Kathy Gale's character in the series, which were introduced as a sort of practical clothing for her to allow her, or allow Honor Blackman, to do the sort of rough and tough judo moves that her character excelled in. And I should mention that Honor Blackman joined a judo club to study, to learn the martial art for the series. She trained very hard and she did a lot of stuff rolling around on very hard concrete studio floors with co-stars and stunt actors. No stunt woman for Honor Blackman, I believe, apart from one episode where she has to dive into water. And apparently Honor Blackman's skills, which were many, did not include swimming very well. So that's, I think, the only time that she was doubled for, amazingly. And her, you know, the actors and stuntmen she was fighting with, they really go for it in those early episodes, Brian.
Yes, they do. And she may have been the first sort of action and fighting woman on television, or at least on British television. Certainly the cast and crew thought that was the case at the time, and they were being very careful to do this well and, you know, do something that was new, that hadn't been done before. They went with those leather outfits because the original things she was wearing, she would sometimes split the back of the trousers or split the top she was wearing and this type of thing. And they ended up deciding leather would work well, and that turned out to be very popular. So it really sort of created something that was new and dynamic and very interesting and popular with the Avengers at that point when she became part of it.
And last time, Brian, you mentioned the difficulties of editing videotape in those days and how even when they weren't shooting live on air, the performances they were recording were pretty much one take and they had to get it all in. And you may have heard this almost infamous story about Honor Blackman doing a fight scene with the stuntman and wrestler, a chap called Jackie Palo, in which they were both throwing everything into it, and she kicked him in the face and knocked him out on camera, and he was apparently unconscious for 7 minutes, lying in a grave in a studio set of a graveyard, which Honor Blackman was very distressed about at the time, but he's since forgiven her, I believe.
I can imagine that would be quite an issue, having to deal with that. Yeah, certainly there were things they could get away with then that you wouldn't see now.
No.
There were, of course, many spin-offs of the Avengers into different media, and we will mention some of the ones that were more closely linked to those first few series. Because series 2 and 3 were so successful, there was actually talk of doing a movie at the time. And that was shelved. That didn't happen when Honor Blackman left the series after series 3 to play Pussy Galore in Goldfinger, the third James Bond film. And of course, that would lead to the Avengers changing and having a different female lead character.
Indeed. Yes. More of that to come another time. There were also spin-offs onto the printed page. We know there was one novel featuring Steed and Gale. That was the 1963 novel The Avengers by Douglas Ennifer. There were comic books, or at least comic strips, that ran in television listing magazines. Again, Steed and Gale featured. These were magazines called Look Westward and The Viewer, which were early 1960s TV listings before, I think, TV Times came into existence. And I'll also mention another book, which I again just reminded myself about doing some of my research this morning. Honor Blackman, so successful as this character that she actually brought out a book called Honor Blackman's Art of Self-Defense for Women, in which she demonstrated and taught some of the judo techniques that she had learned. You can still find secondhand copies of that knocking around. So quite, you know, an impressive achievement for her to put out this book of self-defense based on a TV show.
Did she do her demonstrations while wearing leather?
No, I think she's pictured wearing ordinary clothes and fighting off street attackers. But there's also one of the extras on the disc. You'll see her in the judo, in her full judo kit with clearly a very proficient judo teacher, and they're both throwing each other around the mat quite vigorously. And then she gets interviewed by the book by the TV reporter, who also gets thrown around the mat.
Oh, very nice.
So it's good fun to find that on the extras. Now, also interesting, of course, is now we've got big Finnish adaptations of The Avengers. We've mentioned that there are most of the episodes of the first season are lost. And so particularly of interest is that Big Finish have adapted those into audios. Anthony Howell plays Dr. Keel, and Julian Wadham in almost pitch perfect voice casting as John Steed is fantastic. You know more about these than me, Brian, because you've listened to all of them. I've just listened to the first couple.
Yes, they were very well done indeed. John Dorney adapted most of them for audio, and these are audio remountings, if you like. They adapted whatever materials were available. In some cases, they had scripts. In other cases, they only had synopses and telesnaps, photos of the screens, sometimes multiple synopses. And they would take what they had and did the best they could to reconstruct what those stories were like and adapted them to be audio dramas, which have a bit of a more updated feel to them in some respects, but are also really rooted in the 60s. They kept all of the 1960s sort of time frame and the style of dialogue and the jazz soundtracks. They went with that and the original theme music. So it really feels very much like the series one episodes, but we get all 26 of them spread across 7 box sets. Those are available from bigfinish.com. Also worth noting, they adapted Tunnel of Fear as one of those before the original episode was rediscovered, it was found. And the DVD, the special single DVD of Tunnel of Fear, has the Big Finish version as well as the original version complete in video. And it also has an interview with John Dorney talking about the two versions and the process of the adaptation, which is very good. That's a nice single disc release, and it's very nice that they included the Big Finish one as well.
Oh, nice. Okay.
There was also a novel called Too Many Targets that came out in the 1990s as a sort of Avengers anniversary, and it included almost everyone, it seemed. It included Steed and Dr. Keel and Mrs. Gale and Mrs. Peel and Tara King. All of them were in there, so I'll mention it this time because of that. And it was also adapted for audio by Big Finish, so it's available from bigfinish.com as well.
Ah, fantastic. And of course, Patrick McNee had a gorgeous voice, which was part of his success, I think, as John Steed. And Julian Wadham has got a great voice as well for audio.
Yes. And it really does work very well. Recasting John Steed is a very difficult task, and they did it surprisingly well with Big Finish. It really works.
Yeah, it's great stuff.
We will, of course, at a later time, talk about later series of The Avengers. We'll do the Emma Peel years, about Diana Rigg starring as Emma Peel for those couple of seasons. We will do that later, not this year, not in 2020, but we will cover that later. And there will be many more spin-offs to talk about when we get to that.
There will indeed. So it's getting to that time, Brian, when we have to start telling our listeners what we thought about the early years of the Avengers. Would you like to start us off with something telling us what you liked about these early series?
Okay, aside from saying nearly everything, The Avengers is a great series, and the way it started was pretty good. Those original Dr. Keel and then Dr. King episodes are pretty good. But what I really liked was what they did with John Steed and Kathy Gale. The two of them as a duo were fantastic. And that was definitely the highlight. The banter between them, the way they balanced the two of them, sometimes one being more prominent in an episode, sometimes the other. The way they made them, in many respects, sort of equal importance. That was quite something, and that was sort of the highlight here.
Yes, and it is absolutely intriguing to see some early sort of 1960s television. Tells us a little bit about how television was made then. It's fascinating to see the start of the Avengers, considering what it will go on to become. Like yourself, I don't really have enough of Dr. Keel and Ian Hendry to sort of judge on, and the Dr. King three episodes were rather passed me by. But once Kathy Gale turns up, and John Steed, of course, although this happens in the first series, he starts to adopt the bowler hat and signature umbrella, it just becomes fantastic. It's just wondrous, great fun really to watch, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And series one, the umbrella and bowler hat turned up the odd time, but it was in series two that it started to become a part of his character and started being there more and more. But it was interesting. If you look at series one, what we can look at of series one, and you look at series four, where you have Diana Rigg introduced as Emma Peel, those are very different series. And I was sort of expecting at some point there would be a big jump from one to the other. But there isn't really. It's a gradual change from one to the other. And that is sort of fascinating to see.
Performances. Patrick McNee is a national icon, so is Honor Blackman. They are both terrific screen presences. I don't suppose we can say too much, you know, we can't say anything against them. They're so wonderful, can we, Brian?
Yeah, they were consistent. They were really good throughout. I think Ian Hendry was okay. You know, I think it was a perfectly decent performance, not as memorable, but I think he was perfectly good in it. John Rollison as Dr. King was even less memorable than Dr. Keel, but I think was good enough for what he was given, which was not a great deal.
What about Venus Smith that you particularly liked in her six episodes?
Oh, I did enjoy Venus Smith. That was Julie Stevens in the role. And she was pretty good. It was not an iconic thing in the same way. And I thought her first episode did not use her well. It was kind of weak, but it gets better and they get better at writing her in each episode. And I did like the jazz soundtrack of series 1, 2, and 3. And it is very heavily jazz in 1 and 2 and starts to become somewhat less so in 3, although it's still definitely there. I enjoyed that a lot, and I do listen to jazz, that helps. But having the character of Venus Smith, who was a jazz singer, although there was one episode where it was more into folk or pop kind of stuff, but usually it would be jazz. They would have a 3-piece combo that was credited in the closing credits of the episode, and she would be singing lead. They would do like a feature piece where you would have an entire jazz tune performed by them. Sometimes there would be one or two others where you would only hear a clip of them, but it was sort of a nice feature of those, and I thought she was pretty good, so I did not mind her as part of it at all. I sort of enjoyed those episodes.
Well, okay, excellent stuff. We will mention, of course, as you say, we've got the jazz theme tune from John Dankworth, which is not the same as, you know, Laurie Johnson's classic theme for the Emma Peel years and beyond. But it is good fun, you know, to listen to the jazz. And to, I suppose it's very appropriate for a show set in the early 1960s in UK that there would be jazz clubs and jazz music, and you'd find Steed popping up at a table somewhere when he's got a case to work on.
Yes, absolutely. And it was sort of part of the world they were presenting. That was a big part of it, where by the Emma Peel years, the world they were presenting was quite different and was sort of quite heightened. And when they added color, it became very sort of vivid colors and, you know, this very colorful version of the world, with all of these science fiction type elements becoming more and more common. You didn't have that yet in the first few years, but what you did have worked really well. And I think the big part of things that foreshadowed what would come later and what was sort of iconic to it was when you had Steed and Gale, when you had the lead duo there, which of course would continue with Steed and Peel, but having the two of them there, that was something really special.
Now, while we're talking about great actors, you wanted to mention that, of course, it has a very impressive guest cast list. Some interesting faces and names pop up for us, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. I liked seeing Andre Morel and David Burke in the same episode. So that's one of the best known versions of Quatermass, and the first Dr. Watson to play with Jeremy Brett's Sherlock Holmes. So seeing the two of them show up in the same episode was very nice. Also seeing people like Philip Maddock show up. Some very good actors and familiar actors showing up in guest turns.
Did Andre Morel also play Dr. Watson himself to Peter Cushing in the movie?
That's right, yes.
Yeah, so there's two Dr. Watsons for the price of one in one episode.
Very nice.
John Lemessurier is in there from Dad's Army. Sadly, the episode with Roger Delgado from season one is missing, unfortunately, because I know you'd have liked to have seen that, Brian.
Yes, I've always liked seeing performance from Roger Delgado. We, of course, remember him the most as the original version of the Master from Doctor Who.
Yeah. So I mean, I think Peter Bowles is in there playing a villain. So it's all the great bad guys, or, you know, great actors turning up as bad guys and supporting characters. It's a very rich show with a great cast, and it, you know, even in black and white, digitally restored on these box sets, it looks pretty good now, I think.
It really does, yeah.
I also want to mention again the stunt work, and you know, we've heard how difficult it was to edit videotape, how expensive it was. They weren't allowed to do many takes. And so the fight scenes, which is often on a blackman and a stuntman just going at it on hard concrete floors, no wonder they called for leather clothing, because I know they put their heart and soul into these sequences. And of course, nowadays, Brian, I think we'd see a lot of cross-cutting and editing in a fight sequence. But they didn't have that. They just had to do them and, you know, capture what they got. And I'm very impressed by them, the way that they threw themselves into these scenes.
Yes, they would have multiple cameras, of course, but it would be shot as one continuous scene, with sometimes you would have Patrick McNee and a fisticuffs punch up with someone, and very often you would have Honor Blackman in a fight using her judo skills, and almost always you would have one in the later part of the episode. And they did indeed work very well for the type of thing they were doing at the time, which, as you say, is very different from what you have in newer things, where they do use a lot of editing and so on.
Fascinating stuff. Now, you also mentioned that, you know, we start to see some of the science fiction and fantasy themes that includes it in our remit, Brian. There was a couple of episodes where it starts to creep in.
Yes, the one with the white dwarf star coming towards the Earth certainly seems to fit that, where they're concerned that there may be this catastrophe of this caused by this white dwarf star, and there is this intrigue about who knows what about it and so on.
Yes, and of course there's also, we mentioned briefly, there's a sort of black magic or witchcraft episode that seems to suggest there might be some truth to that. And it's got that early, again, that 1960s interest in devices, in tech, code machines, radars, supercomputers, and you, as you pointed out, also a device that appears to jam all electrical and mechanical devices. So all this sort of stuff does creep into it, doesn't it?
Yeah, those few are probably the biggest ones that we saw in there. But yeah, there are sort of references to things like that that seem, you know, sort of leaning in that direction.
So there's lots of wonders about the first three series of The Avengers. What about, are there any negatives for you, Brian?
There are very few. It is different from what came later, and I missed the theme music that came later, which of course I love and I've known for so long. I missed seeing more of the outlandish sci-fi type things with cyborgs and all of these, you know, sort of over-the-top portrayals of things that would come in a bit later. So I missed some of those things. In terms of actual negatives, there aren't very many. I think the way they dealt with the departure of Dr. Keel, and then the departure of Venus Smith, I think those were not done quite as well as they could have been. I think they moved some of their scripts over to Honor Blackman's Kathy Gale without as much work as they should have used, maybe. And maybe I think there were a couple of scripts that were intended for Venus Smith that maybe should have been kept that way instead of going to Kathy Gale. I think the introduction of Dr. King didn't work that well. I think it would have been better to just recast Dr. Keel and have John Rollison playing Dr. Keel because it was so close. But those are nitpicks. All in all, it worked really well. I think what we have of those sort of earlier things, Series 1 especially, is pretty good. I like it. And what we have as it develops, especially in Series 3, is very good indeed. So there is not a lot to say that's negative about this. What about you, Eamon? Any negative thoughts?
Well, only like yourself, that you have to adjust your sort of mindset slightly to a different theme tune, a different look. These are black and white episodes. A lot of stuff, as we've said, is recorded on videotape in fairly long takes in a way. So if you can get round that slight adjustment and that the series is somewhat different in those early years, I think perhaps almost take yourself away from the Emma Peel years for a while. Forget the wonderful Laurie Johnson theme tune, which I'm sure everybody's sort of humming in their mind at the moment. I am. Then I think it's just such a rewarding watch, and it's also such a fascinating look at television from that era and how one of the greatest shows of all time developed. So yeah, it is just a few nitpicks, and it is just adjusting how you look at this show, but it's great.
So should we move to our recommendations?
Yes, let's go. I think we know how we're going to go on this one, Brian. Tell us.
Well, it's a strong recommendation from me, for sure. And there are a few different ways to get this. Yeah, I would say definitely recommended. The strongest series of the three is Series 3. I think it just keeps building, but there's a lot of good stuff here. I would also recommend the Big Finish, Lost Stories, those Series 1 episodes, particularly box set number 1. Which gives you the best version of the introduction of the series that I think is available at this point. So I would recommend that. I would recommend the series itself. I would recommend the Tunnel of Fear DVD. I would say the best look at series one, if you want to see something of that, is to get the Tunnel of Fear DVD and box set one of the Big Finish series one episodes, because that gives you adaptations of several episodes. It gives you one complete episode. It gives you reconstructions and some nice extras and interviews. So that's a really nice look at that. But yeah, all of this stuff is recommended for sure. It's very good stuff. Yeah, for sure. Strongly recommended.
Yes, it's double thumbs up, because obviously we're going to recommend The Avengers. We love the show. I loved seeing what it started as. It is, I suppose, probably the most expensive thing I've had to buy for this podcast. So it is a big ask, in a way, to get the complete set. But there's so much great stuff. And if you think that we've got the Diana Rigg years to come, you know, not to mention Tara King, it's going to be worth it. So yes, it's a strong recommend from us both here on British Invaders. And we'd love to hear from you, your own memories of watching The Avengers, when you discovered it, what's your favourite era, what you think about these early black and white series.
Absolutely. So, in summary, The Avengers, in its original form, introduces us to Dr. Keel, who is a London doctor who is set to marry his receptionist, only through an odd set of mistakes and flukes, she ends up seeing the wrong people and she ends up being murdered for it by gangland in London. And this leaves Keel wanting to avenge the death of his fiancée, thus the title of the series. And soon he is joined by John Steed, who helps him in avenging, and that story is wrapped up by turning the criminals over to the police in the second episode. And we are on to this earlier series one version of The Avengers, with Dr. Keel as the lead character, fighting crime and dealing with espionage situations with help from the mysterious John Steed, who we know is working for some sort of espionage organization. And as we push into series two, we have other characters backing up Steed, with Keel now being gone, and we very quickly have Dr. Kathy Gale, or Mrs. Gale, being the lead alongside John Steed, and the two of them fight crime and mostly fight in these espionage stories, becoming an iconic pair for the early 1960s.
It's great stuff, and we're big fans here on British Invaders.
Absolutely.
And please come back next time when it's time for our Christmas ghost stories, as we look at the three surviving episodes of a BBC anthology series from 1972 called Dead of Night. And it features at least one episode that may be one of the most infamous and chilling moments on British TV. So something to look forward to next time, Brian.
Absolutely. Until then, you can find all of our episodes, well over 350 of them now, at BritishInvaders.com. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find our Facebook group, where we have all kinds of good discussions going on there.
Absolutely. And we are proud members of the Voice of Geeks Network, which you can find at VogueNetwork.com. Come along and join in the fun there as well.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, Eamon in England also signing off.